Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Thursday, they are ordinary Americans who have led extraordinary lives.
There are going to be some who argue that we don't go nearly far enough.
They play it safe, are quick to assassinate what they do not understand.
Aren't I brilliant?
Are you gay?
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show. The news, what it's talking about here. And every night we take you through the looking glass of media, of talk radio, of what those other guys do. This is the talk show that all those other guys listen to. Truth is our bitch on this show. Margaret Gray joins us this evening. Ted Bell joins us from Ted's of Beverly Hills. Margaret Gray from A Little Bird Told Me. I saw her article in A Little Bird Told Me today about Sandra Bullock and Jesse James, and she comes right out and gives the advice. I'm sure that's advice that every American woman would give Sandra Bullock right now. But we have her coming up in a moment, which I don't believe in such a thing as sexual addiction. I don't think it exists. I think it was created by married people to assuage their guilt. Sexual addiction, you'll notice nobody who's single has that problem, right? It's only married people seem to have that problem. Well, it's called cheating on your spouse. And it's not a physical disease. It's a psychological, it's a socioeconomic, it's all jacked up, Jack. And, you know, if photos of me playing basketball with a Nazi flag draped around me like a cape ever emerge, I'm in big trouble. But that's exactly what happened in the early 1970s while I was rooming with four other guys in Orlando, Florida, in my first radio gig. And one night, and I won't get into it, I wrapped a Nazi flag around my shoulders and tied it at the neck and went outside and started shooting hoops with this Nazi flag as a cape. And if photos of that ever emerge, I'll pay top dollar for them. I'll put them on my I'll put them on my website. You kidding? Anyway, and a teacher is found not guilty of aiding and abetting underage kids in a risque dance performance at the school. The number is 877-876-PHIL. Our affiliate spotlight this hour in Cincinnati, Ohio, WQRT 1160 AM. Great to be on the air in Cincinnati and West Palm Beach, WBZT 1230 AM. On the line, Margaret Gray from the, from a lot of things, from Santa Monica, California. We're going to be talking with Margaret tonight, not so much, Margaret, as a newspaper columnist, but as a mother, although you do write your column and have been writing that column and interviewing celebrities for a long time. But your son is an actor.
Yes.
And he goes to a performing arts school, right?
Yeah, so Jason goes to a school called the Talent Pool School. It's in Santa Monica. And he has been attending middle school there. Next year he starts his high school year. So we're very proud of him. And it is a performing arts school. It's where, oh God, I don't want to get into the names, Frank. You know, Frank is here. But we've got some very, very well-known young people that go to the school. And a lot of very well-known parents, obviously, who, are dropping their children off in the morning.
All right, Margaret, so this is really about you as a parent, because we saw the story here in the state of Georgia, a Georgia teacher acquitted of criminal charges in connection with a suggestive dance routine that the students performed in class in 2008. Three male teens were caught on camera gyrating as other students shouted and cheered.
You know, I've got a comment to make about that right off the bat.
All right, but I do want to get into your experience.
No, I'm totally fine with that, but I have a comment to make about that right off the bat. Don't we have better things to do than to indict and charge criminally our teachers? This, Phil, I don't even know where to begin. This baby boomer generation is the most spoiled generation of parents I think I've ever seen, and I put myself in that category. I really do.
So you're really sympathetic with that teacher. I don't really have a problem with her either. I think that it probably was something promulgated by the parents.
Oh, I can assure you this was promoted among the parents to get a teacher in trouble. I think that this country isn't good enough for teachers. I think that if I were a teacher coming out of an American college today, I'd look for a job in another country. I really mean that.
All right, well, I don't want to get into the politics of it, you know, but...
Phil, I think it's something that needs to be said on behalf of our teachers.
All right, well, you may very well be right. I don't want to get into that. I know that I don't think teachers are treated all that well, although there are times, every now and again, when I defend teachers that I have to take it back because something stupid. But, you know, that one of them does something stupid. But I think the rules, like you're saying, that they work under...
They work under the most arcane rules, medieval rules. They change all the time. Every time one of these parents, Phil, gets a you know, as Frank likes to say, gets a pole up there, you know what, and...
Get a pole up there.
All right, hold on.
Well, I can hear Frank. I don't want to hear Frank tonight, okay?
Frank, he doesn't want to hear...
How you doing, young man?
I'm good, Frank. Thank you very much, pal. And I agree with you.
All right, here.
But, Phil, what we did... You want to talk about Jason J. Delmonico's dance. That was a student and parent dance.
I understand that. Now, at that dance, you were approached by other teachers...
No, what happened was this, and it was really petty and very childish. I was a professional dancer on Broadway for 4 years, as you know.
Yeah.
When the dance was on, and we all got out on the dance floor, and this was, as you said, it was a parent-teacher dance, and, excuse me, it was a parent-student dance, and the teachers were there as well. So I got out of the dance floor, and because I was a former professional dancer, I'm going to do some dance moves that are not familiar to a lot of the parents.
Like for instance, what?
Well, there's full layouts, and there's the tiger crawl, and you're hiking your skirt up in some instances. These are all very professional moves. And you're wrapping your leg, and you're doing these things that are second nature. And I think at a performing arts school, and even if it wasn't a performing arts school, I think... It is an atmosphere that we should condone and at least tolerate the dancing style of someone who was professional. What I got instead, Phil...
All right, now, yeah, because you got some complaints.
What I got instead were parents complaining to Dan McDougall, who was the principal, that I was dancing inappropriately. And I have to tell you, I thought I was going to faint. I really did. I have never in my life been accused of dancing in a vulgar way, and yet that's exactly what was happening. And I got to tell you something, Phil. I had to laugh because I thought, you know, these poor... I really thought this way. I thought these poor rubes, they don't even get what they're seeing, you know.
Well, they saw you dancing in a risque or inappropriate way. And you felt that you were dancing in a professional way.
I was dancing in a completely professional way, Phil. There's nothing wrong with the way I was dancing.
Well, you said at one point you hike your skirt up.
During the course of the evening, there was all kinds of music. The band was playing everything from Beyonce to Chicago and to Bryan Adams and then back to Usher and things like that. So the music was all over the boards for the evening because we had the parents and the students. And so I was on my feet. I love to dance. And yes, I was doing, at one point, I was dancing with, and this probably is what got some of the parents a little bit upset, I was dancing with Josh King, who is the son of Fela King. I don't know if you know them.
I don't know them. Is he a senior?
He's a senior, yeah. And we were dancing, and he spun me out. And I came back and I wrapped my leg around his waist. Now, hold on.
Okay, see, that's exactly what they were talking about.
Hold on there, Phil. Hold on. I don't want you to be a one-man committee of decency here, all right?
Well, you're dancing with a high school senior. You're wrapping your leg around his waist, you know.
This is a... I'm a former Broadway dancer, Phil. I'm not dancing crudely.
But you hiked your skirt up at one point, did you not? You told me all of this stuff.
Yes, I did. And again, I explained to you, I'm a little bit... I don't know what you want me to say.
Okay, if you're dancing and they're saying that it's crude you hike your skirt up... Forgive me, Margaret, I have to ask you this.
Yes.
Were you wearing underwear?
I was wearing pantyhose. I was wearing pantyhose. Any woman will tell you, you're covered up.
They said that you hiked your skirt up and they were looking through, you know.
Well, I don't know who told you that, but I explained to McDougal and the rest of them on Monday. I was a dancer on Broadway. If you've got some woman who's had three or four margaritas and she's out on the dance floor and she is acting like the town, you know, streetwalker, that's one thing. But when you have a woman who appeared in The Fantastics, which I did, when you have a woman who appeared in Man from La Mancha as a dancer, which I did, on Broadway, I think you can say to those people, she's a former professional dancer. Obviously, you people don't understand what it is you're looking at. This is really what upset me more than anything else. And these parents got together and, like, little clucking hens, you know, I thought it was very amusing. So I said later at the school, I said, this is a performing arts high school. If we can't recognize what great professional dancing is...
All right, but hold on. Can I just interrupt you for a moment?
No, but if we cannot recognize that, Phil, then what are we going to tell our children?
There were students there as young as 13 or 14.
This is not about me. This is about the provincial attitudes of some... It's about the provincial attitudes of a lot of parents, Phil.
All right, so I just want to be clear. You wrapped your leg around this kid.
I wrapped it around a pole. I wrapped it around him. I did a skirt hike. I did a layout. And
what is a layout?
I did the splits, all right? Now, all of these moves are professional dance moves.
Yeah, but what people were saying, and I understand, I know that you're pro, they could see under your dress.
Phil, anybody else, I would understand this. I was a professional. It is not vulgar when done by someone who knows what they're doing. And I knew what I was doing. These parents, I don't know, some of these mothers, maybe they're jealous. Maybe they wish they could dance like me.
Well, all I knew is that what you told me is that a lot of these women were upset that you were doing these dance moves and they could see under your dress. But what you're saying is that as a professional, it's not vulgar.
Because I know what I'm doing. And, you know, they're always looking to complain. They wish. Those women wish they were in the kind of shape that I'm in to do some of those moves.
All right, let's go to do a break, and then we'll come back, okay?
Absolutely.
We're talking with Margaret Gray, the author of the Little Bird Told Me column about her experience at her son's. It was at parent-student dance, where some of her dance moves were interpreted by the other parents and teachers as vulgar or crude, but Margaret's a former dancer on Broadway, so she is explaining here that, you know, when you're a dancer, when you're a professional... obviously, you are not dancing like you're the town, as she said, I don't know, floozy or streetwalker. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. We'll get to your phone calls and more from Margaret Gray. Later on, we get Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills to talk about small business scrambling to try to help this country that, in his words, is being wrecked by Barack Obama. 877-876-PHIL. Phil is our number, and on the line with us is Margaret Gray from Santa Monica. Her son attends the Talent Pool School, which is a performing arts school there in Santa Monica. Now, this was a dance, and I understand it was a parent-student dance, and as such, you're there with the students, and I know it's a performing arts school, Margaret, and I know that you used to be a professional dancer, but when you're doing dance steps where you're literally lifting your skirt over your hips, I guess, you know.
It's really about the culture. I think if you're raised in an environment where everything is what I call a tee-hee, that is, you put your finger to your cheek and go, ooh, you know, how daring that was. Well, it's not really all that shocking when you are a polished professional. When you're a sophisticated individual and you understand what it is you're seeing, if I got up in front of a group of parents, all right, as I did, for instance, when we had Jason's class, and we traveled to Indiana last year. You remember that?
That was the, it was the performing arts sing.
Yes, and we were in Bloomington, Indiana. And I got out on the dance floor for one of our parent student dances, and I was wearing, at that time I was wearing tights. I was wearing, and I know you laughed, but I was wearing leopard skin tights and heels.
Right.
Well, I got out there, and I shook my rear end a little bit, and I pulled the tights down, you know, halfway down my hips. I was trying to show those people there what it means to perform. And what did we get? We got complaints. We got an awful lot of people. I was stunned, and I was very sad, really, to hear a lot of those parents say, and I can't do it, but you know, well, I don't think, you know what I mean?
Well, but look, Margaret, that's Bloomington, Indiana, where you were with the kids, and you're out there doing these dances, you know, where you're shaking your rear end and pulling your tights down.
All right, and so you say what, that Bloomington is more hip than Santa Monica?
No, I'm not. I'm saying Santa Monica got upset with it too, didn't they? Santa Monica didn't like it. Bloomington, Indiana didn't like it.
The point that I'm making is that Santa Monica should have been much more comfortable with it. I was stunned to see Santa Monica react the way they did in Bloomington, or the way they did that night in Athens, Georgia, as well.
Well, you're doing a national tour with these kids, and they're dancing, and you're out there pulling your tights down and pulling them up, you know.
Bill, you know, I'm beginning to resent this a little bit.
No, I know that you're a professional, and you don't mean anything sexual, but when you pull, let me ask you something. If you have on a pair of tights and you pull them up so that you're looking at the obvious contours of your body.
That was the Lawrence of Arabia dance.
I know what you mean about the Lawrence of Arabia dance and their on their camels and all that stuff.
It was an interpretive dance, and those people in Bloomington, the people in Indiana, you know, I really resent the position you're taking right now.
No, they simply said that they saw you pulling your tights up so tight that they're looking at the contours of your body. They were trying to be polite.
They don't get it about performance art. They don't get it. And that's why I was almost saddened to the point of tears to see the people in Santa Monica react the same way.
All right, I I'm a friend of yours. I understand. I'm just trying to suss this out, as they say. 877-876 Phil.
Well, the parents treated me as if I was some kind of a cougar. All right, and that's good and bad. That means the fathers think I'm attractive, and the mothers think that I am almost as if I'm carrying a disease, an STD, some sort of a superbug, and it is absolutely belittling.
All right, 877-876 Phil. I'm sorry if you had that feeling. Here is Nathaniel in Fresno, California. Nathaniel, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please.
I feel that there are a lot of forms of dance that might not be appropriate in a high school function. Take, for example, exotic dancing. The underlying defense here was that, I'm a professional.
No, this is not exotic dancing.
You know?
This is from
stage. I know, but a lot
the Broadway
of stuff
stage.
Looks like that. It is not appropriate because it looks like that and it portrays that.
They're no, it does not portray that. It does not. You don't understand. I was doing dance steps from Man
Just
Singa Mantra, from the Fantastic. I was
for
doing
all
dance steps.
Situations.
It means that some people don't understand it.
Well, at what point does the lack of understanding, and your understanding as a performer, at what point do you say as a performer, these people don't get it? Maybe I ought to tone it down a little bit.
No, that is censorship. That is censorship, and that's not what
we do.
Well,
I feel that's common courtesy.
Common courtesy
is opening an issue with it and are taking exemption from what you're doing because there are children involved and they don't want their children to be exposed to this. I think as a teacher, as a professional teacher, you should have the kind of courtesy to refrain from doing that and say, I have a responsibility to teach.
I have a responsibility to teach as well and to say, just because you can see through my pantyhose doesn't mean I'm trying to do a sex dance. I'm doing a dance from Man from La Mancha.
Yeah, but they're looking right through your pantyhose.
And then there is a difference had it been a dance class where you were instructing that form of dance, that would have been a
right.
different story.
Listen, Phil, about a half hour ago, you were agreeing with me. Now you're agreeing with this man.
The gentleman is making some good points.
I really feel like I'm getting stuck in the back here.
All right, thank you, sir. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. How far do you dance these suggestive dances in front of kids?
Phil Hendry.
Back with Margaret Gray in a moment.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, I'm listening. Margaret, I don't know if you can hear that music.
Yes, okay, good. This is good. Listen. All right, so two, three, and one, two, three. And I do a full splay. Now, this is a full splay. And you're right, my dress does come above my... My dress comes a little bit above my hips.
But see, you're not...
Oh, hold on. I twirling around. And then I do a split, a sort of a very modified split. And yes, you're supposed to be able to see. When you do a split, you are supposed to see under the skirt a little bit.
All right, I got it. Just get back to our phone calls.
But that's a small demonstration there. And that is what is called jazz dance. And for some of these fathers at the school or in Bloomington where we went in Indiana, To look upon what I'm doing as a lap dance, they wish.
877, well, I don't know. 877-876-PHIL. They were complaining, you know, about what was going on. Let's go to Tina on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Tina.
All I have to say is dancing like that at all, at any kind of school function, I don't care even if it is a school of dance. It's not appropriate at all. I understand.
I agree with you if it's being done by someone that is not a professional. I was on Broadway.
Professional or not. I'm a stripper. I do strip occasionally, not as much as I used to. I find
Darling, I'm not talking, with all due respect, I'm not talking about stripping, all right? I'm talking about being on Broadway.
Broadway. It doesn't matter if you anything that shouldn't be shown in the school. It's inappropriate. You have to mortify the daylights out of your child.
You know, Phil, if I could, I find it very offensive that you've got a stripper telling me what to do.
Tina is calling in as any other caller, okay?
But she doesn't know. She said, oh, yeah.
It's a children's school. You're not supposed to dance like that, ever.
Well, why do you dance the way you do?
Even if you're a professional dancer, it doesn't... Dancing like that makes you look unprofessional.
Dear, I'm talking about Broadway dance. You know what I'm not talking about? I'm not talking about hunching a pole in a strip joint. Excuse me.
You said you put your leg around a teenage boy.
What's the difference?
If I was that child's mother, I would smack the daylights out of you.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that you're putting your leg around... Are you not wrapping your leg around things? Yes. So I don't think you...
She's wrapping her leg around a pole. Were you dancing with a teenage boy?
I was showing that...
School. I'm dancing in a club for 21
years. I was showing that boy...
There's a huge difference between the two, darling.
I was showing that boy jazz dance. If you are telling the students, oh, look at this, let's get our rocks off watching Tina, then they're going to think it is inappropriate. But I was showing that jazz dance.
You don't dance like that in the school. Do you not understand? You do not dance like that in the school. In a strip club that is different. There are no children.
Margaret, I was curious.
Phil, let me demonstrate to her what I'm talking about. If you can just get here. Now, you've heard this music before, obviously. Yes. Tina, can you hear this?
I don't think Tina can hear the music.
Well, you know she's danced to this. How many 20s have gotten shoved down that? You know what I mean?
And
you do the full layout.
And inappropriate All right. for a school.
I don't think you're in any place to say that what I did was disgusting.
Do you dance to Michael Jackson like that in your son's school? What is wrong with you?
I'll invite all of your listeners now to call in and defend me. This was a stripper that was telling me that I'm dancing inappropriately.
Well, I don't know that you're going to get a lot of people who are going to back you up.
I know a lot of callers agree with me, and I think it's highly offensive. And
I think a lot of callers are going to understand Bob Fosse, and not you coming out dancing to "You Can Leave Your Hat On." And I would ask you this: have you ever danced to Michael Jackson?
You don't dance in a school like that. Period. That's it. You just don't dance in a school like that.
All right. Have you danced to Michael Jackson's music?
Yes, I have, but that doesn't matter. Right. You just don't dance in a school.
So you feel good.
You don't dance in a school like that.
You feel good making that
you
kind of piss money to a dead man's
like
music.
With children.
Margaret.
No, Phil, maybe what she's saying is right, but this is a woman that makes big tip money to a dead man's music. And I find that offensive.
What are you talking about?
I don't dance to Michael Jackson. I have my own track that I dance to, and no one in hell would I dance to Michael Jackson.
Well, you lied then, because you said you did.
All right, look, Tina, I appreciate your perspective. I really do, and thank you very much. And I don't think you should belittle her simply because she is a stripper.
I think that the people listening to this broadcast right now understand that I just did battle on behalf of thousands of mothers. I told that stripper where to get off. It's one thing for her to give a man a lap dance to the music of a dead man while shoving it right up into it.
All right, I understand what you're saying, okay?
It's another thing entirely, Phil, for me to be giving performance jazz dance lessons.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Scott. Scott, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't know that it's so much about whether it's right or wrong. I think when I am listening to her that it sounds like she has some success and attention while she was dancing on Broadway years ago. And it sounds to me like she's actually missing the attention, and so she's going out and dancing provocatively and kind of receiving that attention. So it fills that void that she had when she was younger and performing and getting applause and things like that. So I'm kind of more, my comment's more addressing why she's deciding to act out like this.
I don't know how to respond to that. I'm a former professional dancer. I gave this performance in front of the students and the parents as a way of demonstrating what jazz dance is. Some of it is risque. It is not obscene. Unless, of course, the people who are watching it are not educated. Now, I don't know where you are.
Gentleman's in West Palm Beach.
Well, that's near Miami. I would expect that band to have a little more education than some of these, forgive me for saying this, some of these hayseeds.
Margaret, you just talked to a lady in Boston. You're talking to a man down in Miami. This is not hayseed country, okay? And you're talking to people in Santa Monica. That's Los Angeles. So they understand what a performance is. And what an obscene dance is.
What was obscene about what I did? Tell me, go ahead.
Didn't you say that?
Phil,
go ahead, Scott.
This is probably none of our business, but what is your age category? I mean, are you in your 30s?
You know,
or 40s?
You've already demeaned my ability as a dancer. Now you want to make fun of my age? Is that it?
No, I don't think so. But it's not making fun, I'm just trying to understand. It's fun to understand why you feel your actions are appropriate and
are you telling me, so you think I'm Baby Jane? Is that what you think, I'm Baby Jane? You think I'm getting into my makeup and I've got Victor Buono throwing up on my piano? Is that it?
No, Margaret. No.
That's what he thinks. I'm Baby Jane. Let me tell you something, friend. If you saw me, the lights would go out. So,
Margaret, I know that you're an attractive woman. She's in her 50s.
How dare you?
The man was asking, and we have to know. Now, the point here is that you're dancing in this way that you say people don't understand. Now, everybody is misinterpreting.
Margaret?
Well, they're misinterpreting because we don't have exposure to the arts.
If you're lifting your dress up above your rear end, and you're not wearing panties on, and you got pantyhose on, and people can see through it, and then you're wrapping your leg around somebody, and then you're doing this crawl, and God knows what.
Thank you for butchering beyond recognition by act with your lifting your dress above your hips with no...
Well, I think it's the venue of where you were doing this was inappropriate. If you wanted to expose people to the arts, then you should do it on a stage in a professional environment, not at a high school or middle school.
And, Scott, I would tell you, well, I think what you're saying is very good. If you saw me, it'd be a $20 minimum.
No, it's really...
Whatever that means, you know.
Meaning, what I meant to say was he'd look at me and say, well, she must be $20. Never mind.
You don't want to be taken as an obscene dancer. And yeah, I'm sorry, Scott. Go ahead. I was just going to say she doesn't want to be taken as an obscene dancer, but she's already pricing herself as a lap dance.
Well, that's what these guys understand.
Okay, listen, brother. I appreciate you. No, I appreciate your call very much. Let's move on. 877-876-PHIL.
You know, I'm glad you got rid of him because all I could hear from that band was... and I am absolutely stunned beyond all recognition that you kept him on as long as you did.
He was making excellent points, and he was trying to be very sensitive to you. And
oh, he's saying, how old are you? Maybe this is an age category thing. As if I'm Baby Jane, and I roll my eyes upstairs as I put the lid over the rat.
Margaret, you know...
No, not Margaret, you know. No, not Margaret, you know. No. I've been insulted. Frank and I do a lot for the school.
What's that?
Jason J. Delmonico's school.
877-876-PHIL. Let's take another phone call here. We have Jeff in Illinois. Jeff in Illinois. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Margaret Gray.
How you doing? I've heard over and over and over Margaret's statement that she is a professional, which is understood by everybody in your audience.
Well, I don't think people get the connection.
Let me finish first, and then I'll let you have your chance.
Go right ahead.
Thank you.
Go right ahead.
I'm a public school teacher, and I've taught all different ages. And what they see, they imitate. What they know, you know, what they know is appropriate, they know is inappropriate or appropriate. I don't understand how you're incapable of understanding you're being inappropriate. In a public school, be it if it's professional dance, be it that you've been on Broadway, I understand that up and down. I mean, you've made that abundantly clear. I don't understand.
All right, I'll tell you this much. You know the statue of David. You know the statue of David. You know that it's a nude statue. You know that you take children to see nude statues. You've taken children to the museum to see a nude David. You've taken children to the museum to see, in some instances, a nude Madonna as she is nursing the baby Jesus. To you, that is not obscene, and to me, it's not obscene.
Would tell you that
but when I go out on the dance floor and I show my ass...
You're a professional dancer or not, Margaret, I don't understand how you're incapable of understanding the inappropriateness of your actions. Wake up. Common sense will tell you. Use the common sense that God gave you. Please wake up and realize it.
I am. A new David and a new Madonna.
And your ass.
Yes.
Margaret, you just said that we take kids to museums to see
the nude David.
Yeah, the nude David and the Madonna and the Virgin Mary and your ass.
Well, so what?
Margaret,
keep speaking. I love this program.
Oh, you do? You love the show? Okay, here it is. Take a child to see the nude David, which is a classic statue, I'm sure you would agree.
Well,
never mind.
Yeah, the guy's right. The new David, a classic statue, and your ass.
I happen to think it's also a work of art.
Not from Michelangelo.
You know, both of you guys, this is two men ganging up on a woman.
Huh.
Two men ganging up on a woman. I really... And you know something, Phil?
No, Margaret, nobody is... I'm not putting down your performance experience, nor is this gentleman, but what we're saying is when you display it in front of children...
It was a dance, a parent-student dance. And when I lift my dress up and you're looking at what I got...
Oh, then I'm staring at the Michelangelo's...
The what?
I'm looking at a statue?
No.
All right, look, sir, thank you very much. 877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray on the line here. Appreciate the gentleman from Joliet, Illinois. He's a teacher talking with us about Margaret Gray and this dance, this modern jazz dance, whatever the hell she calls it, that she was doing in front of the students at the school. She may call it a Broadway dance or an interpretive dance or a classically artistic dance, but when you're looking at her rear end with, you know, just the pantyhose, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, P-H-I-L. Back with Margaret Gray and your phone calls in a moment on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
This is so unfair.
No, it's not unfair.
Phil Henry.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and we're going to get back to some phone calls, Margaret, but one of the major complaints of that night at this parent-student dance was that you and a girl by the name of Christy Rodriguez, a mother by the name of Christy Rodriguez, did a dance step from Chicago.
I know, I don't want to talk about this, Phil.
Well, I mean, we have to talk about it. Okay, Ms. Rodriguez herself, the mother of two boys in the school, was shocked by it.
You know something, Phil? Christy Rodriguez had a double mastectomy, and I was doing something to try to make her feel like a woman. Now, this is a move from Chicago. I put my face between her, and I'll tell you something else. She has newly reconstructed breasts. They're beautiful. So I put my face between them, and I went like that, like a man would.
And that's from Chicago.
Yes, it's from Chicago.
And what made you think that woman needed to feel like a woman?
She'd had a double mastectomy.
She'd had reconstructive surgery. She was healthy. She's out dancing.
You're making me the bad guy here. That's the thing that really makes me crack. That makes me laugh until I want to. I have to go to the toilet.
877. You don't have to whisper, ma'am. 877.
Well, I don't. You know what? I'm not as crude as some of you people have been.
877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call. Elaine in Los Angeles. Elaine, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, ma'am.
Yeah, I just wanted to say how she said earlier that she felt like it was guys ganging up on her. I'm a female myself, and I am really young. I consider myself, you know, pretty liberal, understanding of, you know, everything like that. And I wanted to comment on how you were comparing what you did to going to see the Statue of David, because that is artistic nudity. There's no, like, sexual connotation to it whatsoever. And obviously what you did in
front
of children...
There's no sexual connotation to what I did. There's no sexual connotation to what I did either. That's what you're missing,
What you're doing is basically... Well, the dancing that you're doing is basically like burlesque dancing. If you were doing stuff like from Chicago and stuff, how is that not sexually?
That is jazz dance. That is jazz dance. That is modern interpretive dance. It is not sexy in the sense. What's sexy about putting your face between two reconstructed breasts? You know
that's uncalled for.
What
that is, you know, it's one thing to, first of all, say the woman's had this kind of surgery, then to do this move that you wanted to make her feel better and hear on national radio, but, you know, it was two reconstructed breasts. That's so hypocritical.
Bill, I work with children, and I think it's so unfair. I tried to do my best. You know something? No one has mentioned Buzz Aldrin on Dancing with the Stars, have they? Does he look like he's got to pull up his, you know what? Yes. Has anybody called him out on that? No.
He's not acting sexual.
He's not acting sexual, so he doesn't look like he's battling a you know what.
What do you mean a you know what?
That's on TV. That's not at a school where there are children, where parents
send their children
to that school not expecting them to be exposed to anything like that.
Are you telling me you don't think children are watching Buzz Aldrin? A man who we should honor, who had landed on the moon, and he is dancing as if he's a little stiff-legged from you-know-what. I am...
You know, I don't see any of that. I don't see any of that.
You don't see any of that in that, but when you look at me dancing, you think I'm a slut.
No one has used the word slut. What people have said is overly sexual dancing. Overly sexual dancing. What is this?
Oh. And here he is after he...
Overly sexual.
After Buzz Aldrin gets out and dances as if he's... You know, as if he has to strap it to his leg. Now he...
All right, can we clean it up a little bit?
Comes out with a phone app.
All right, Elaine, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Warren on the Phil... Oh, you know what? We're plumb out of time, Warren. I'll give you 30 seconds, sir. Go ahead. 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. First off, we accept the responsibility. My question is professional. There should be some type of professional accountability and responsibility in your performance. Would you do that same performance, say, in a church dance, for instance, when you're doing your Broadway show?
Oh, I'd have
show,
no problem. I'd have no problem with church dance.
Now, I only got 20 seconds, 5 seconds now. Whenever you was doing Broadway, when you were doing Broadway, did you have underclothes underneath your garments? Or
of course not.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
My first reaction is pretty awesome that people are just having sex out in the open.
There have been people who've called us pedophiles, they've called us perverts.
For about 3 or 4 years now, we've been doing this every time.
It's something that's behind closed doors.
I've used the N-word most of my life.
Keep that chicken.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, Radio for Patriots, by Patriots. And tonight we've got a couple of interesting guests for you. First off, we're going to be talking with Lloyd Bonafide, who is a Korean War veteran. He's going to be giving us a perspective I don't think you've ever heard anywhere else. The perspective on whether or not those Japanese workers going in to deal with that radiation, and some of them have said, we fully expect to die, whether that's necessary or not. We're going to talk to Lloyd about that. And we also have Dr. Ron Turner and the challenges of teachers and what they do to get over those challenges. I think you're going to be shocked at this underground of teachers who use a website, a hub, to post pictures of students and to make fun of them. World famous Phil Hendry Show is every night worldwide on the World Wide Web, and you can go to the website philhendryshow.com and watch Phil TV in HD. This is our live streaming video of the show right now. If you've got Skyfire on your iPhone, you can watch us on the iPhone, you can watch us on your Android, you can watch us on any mobile device, and that means you can take this radio show wherever you want to take it, and you can watch the video of it as well. Go to our shop. We've got a brand new item. People who are watching the video cast can see it. In fact, we were drinking from it during the pre-show, and that is the Phil Hendry Show coffee mug. It's delicious. The mug itself is not delicious, although I might take a bite out of it, you know.
Yeah, but what's in it?
What's in it is delicious, yeah. And I'm sure the mug makes it taste all the better. So go to our shop there at philhendryshow.com. This is one of the most engaging stories, tragic stories, and certainly one that will be talked about for quite some time, and that is the Japanese nuclear rescuers, these nuclear workers who recognize that it is inevitable some of them will die. And it is inevitable, they say, that they will die within weeks. And yet they are going to go in at the disaster-stricken Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan, and they say they expect to die from radiation sickness as a result of their efforts to bring the reactor under control. The mother of one of these men has talked to Fox News, and that was her claim. And that's just the kind of thing, my goodness. Well, the first thing that comes to your mind is the word hero. And then all kinds of biblical things, you know. No greater love has a man for another than to give his life for his fellow man, right? Isn't that what the Bible says? Speaking tearfully through an interpreter by phone, the mother of a 32-year-old worker said, "My son and his colleague have discussed it at length. They've committed themselves, and his colleagues, plural, they have committed themselves to die if necessary to save
the nation. He told me they have accepted that they will all probably die from radiation sickness in the short term or cancer in the long term. That's pretty powerful. And the first thing that came to my mind, and I call me a cynic, was I wonder if this were happening in America, I wonder if we'd hear the same thing out of an American nuclear worker or reactor worker. I suspect we would, but I always kind of just keep those things in the back of my mind, you know, just because I don't think the courage and that kind of courage where you give your life for somebody else, I don't think these things are bought cheaply. I don't think that these things are bought cheaply. I think that these things, it takes a lot, you know, and it takes a lot to join these boots. These are the courageous boots, the wearers of these shoes, the courageous people who would take up that call and help the country. I want to go to the line here, Lloyd Bonafide. He's a Korean War veteran, served in the United States Navy from 1950 to 1953, joins us from Alhambra, California. Lloyd is retired now, and he and his wife owned a heating and plumbing business now for many years. Lloyd, good evening.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and I've enjoyed listening to you for a long time, Mr. Henry. Thank you for allowing me on your program.
Thank you very much for joining me, sir. When you hear these Japanese workers say that they are going to most likely die, but they will do it because they want to save their country and they want to bring this cooling system, they want to bring this reactor under control, does it take you back to any similar situations that you saw when you were a young man in combat?
Well, I have to tell you that when I used to hear about these heroes, I don't mean any disrespect, but I don't think you can be very intelligent if you say I'm going to go in there and I'm going to die. You can't possibly be all that intelligent. Now,
well, we're not talking about intelligence, though, are we?
Well, yes, we are. We're talking about. There's a lot of things that you want to say or to talk about, and one of them is, am I bright enough to get out of this situation that I'm in? With my, as we used to say in the service, with my rear end intact. No one wants to go into a war or go into any situation like that and come out of it in a body bag. That's not the goal. The goal is to go, as General Patton said, and make the other poor dumb, the other dumbass die for his country.
But in the case of these radiation, these nuclear reactor workers, these nuclear rescuers, as they're being called, this is not a war against anybody. It's a war against a terrible event, against technology run amok to save the country.
But it's still a war, and you don't go into a war saying, I think what I'd like to do today is die. Only an idiot things like that.
Well, that's not what these men are saying, though.
No, well, they're not saying it in so many words, but they're essentially saying, I want everyone to know that I'm going to die. It reminds me of my own son, and I spoke to your producer before my son Jerome was a United States Army lieutenant in Vietnam. And he, it was like any other day, and they were in a group of attack helicopters, and anyway, someone said that there was a hand grenade, and he jumped on the hand grenade. Well, now, this is the stupidest thing you can do. And
he jumped on the hand grenade, though, and saved the lives of other men.
He might have saved the lives of he didn't save his own life. Do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? This is an idiot. And now he's my son, and I loved him very dearly, and I love him to this day. But only an idiot throws himself on a hand grenade.
But what about the men that are going to die?
What about the men that are going to... You can say that there's going to be... Excuse me, I don't mean to raise my voice.
Well, I'm asking a stupid question. Maybe I don't understand here, but... I believe that a man that... we give medals for that. We give the Congressional Medal of Honor for that.
Oh, I know that. We give medals for being stupid all the time. if there's one thing that the United States does, it's give out medals to some of the dumbest SOBs. And again, I say I love my son, and I'll always love him. But you've got to be you really have got to be about 5 cents short of a full dollar to say, oh, look at that, there's a hand grenade. I know what I'll do. I'll jump on it. It's not a natural act.
And so the legacy of your son having jumped on a hand grenade is that he's stupid.
Stupid. Yes, sir. Now, the other...
But so, and how do you say your son is stupid and at the same time honor him?
Of course I honor him. I love my son. And I'm not so, you know, Mr. Henry, I'm not so high... I don't have such a high opinion of myself that I don't... that I can't love a stupid man. Of course I love my son. The Japanese workers that are going to go into this nuclear power plant and they're going to restore this power plant to some sort of functionality, they're going to control or otherwise bring under control the dangerous elements of this power plant, and they acknowledge that it's going to kill them. Well, I don't know what to say. I don't think I've ever heard anything quite that stupid in my life. And
don't you at all give these men credit for saving the lives of many, many people that could be contaminated with that radiation?
No, I don't give them credit for that because they're going to kill themselves.
And but what about the people's lives that they're saving?
And look, Mr. Henry, I can say it a lot of different ways to you. I think there's 50. They call them the Fukushima 50. Is that what the thing on? I saw the TV show.
Yes, sir. The Fukushima 50.
All right. You know what they ought to call them? They ought to call them the dumbass 50 because what these dumbasses are going to do is
Why would you say that about men? I'm having a hard time.
Well, listen to me, please.
All right.
These dumbasses have been working in these four reactors, and that were damaged on the tsunami, and they have been repeatedly exposed to dangerously high radioactive levels. That is not a natural act. Standing there and soaking up radiation like you're getting a suntan.
And well, I don't think they went in there though.
Hold on for a minute. Just hold on for a minute. Now then. They know that they've been exposed to dangerously high levels of radiation, and guess what they're going to do? You want a good one? Are you sitting down for this? They're going back in. And so they're going to kill themselves so they can bring this radioactive plant back under control, but they're dead.
But other people live.
Well, good for the other people, but what about the guys that are... You don't understand, do you?
So you're saying, in other words, that a man giving his life...
Well, I personally don't think there's such a thing as a man giving his life. I think that there is such a thing as a dumbass. That's what I think there is. A dumbass who has decided that I'm going to go in there and suck up a little radioactivity.
And he's not thinking about anybody else's life. He's not thinking about saving anybody. He's just a dumbass.
Well, no, he's thinking he's going to save people, but then wait a second, I'm dead. Then he gets dead, and that's the dumbass part.
So it's not worth it. In other words, in your mind, if the guy's dead, then it wasn't worth it.
Well, hold on for a minute. I saw this young man who was my son. I saw his mother cry herself to sleep for a year. And why? Because the dumbass jumped on a hand grenade. And
well, the man, he saved the lives of his comrades. Was he not decorated posthumously?
Yeah, they gave him a Silver Star. So what? The guy is in a box, and I don't open it because I don't know how many different... I don't know what they got, you know, how much of them they're burying.
Oh, come on, man. You're talking about your son. You're talking about, in my opinion, you're talking about very brave people.
Mr. Henry, I got to tell you. There's a fine line between brave and as dumb as the day is long, as dumb as a handful of Georgia clay. There's a very fine line between that. And while the Japanese workers may think that they're saving a lot of lives, they're going back in there like the dumbasses they are to try to get this work done. And meanwhile, they're sucking up more radiation you know, than the, what was the, not the monkey, but the, you remember that giant?
Godzilla.
Yeah, more than Godzilla. So, you know.
Well, I don't know that this is a time or a place for jokes. And
I'm not joking. You don't understand. I'm not joking. I am telling you, I love my son dearly, and he's about as stupid as a bag full of hammerheads when he jumped on that the hand grenade.
All right, Lloyd, hang on the line here. The Japan's nuclear rescuers, stupid. Why? They're going in and they're going to kill themselves trying to bring this reactor under control. Lloyd's son, who jumped on a hand grenade in Vietnam, stupid. Why? He got himself blown up. This is the voice and the opinion of a man who is a combat veteran who believes that these people are not gaining anything other than sucker status. So we'll be back with Lloyd Bonafide to talk more about the Japanese reactor, the Fukushima 50, these brave plant workers struggling to prevent a meltdown to four reactors while they themselves are exposed to critically high levels of radioactivity. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Are they stupid or are they brave? We'll be back.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
No, I don't. Welcome back. You're the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, radio for patriots by patriots. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And on the line with me is Lloyd Bonafide, a U.S. Navy veteran of Korea. Your son was killed in Vietnam when?
My son was killed in September of 1969 at a place called Pleiku. And they were in a squadron, I guess, of these attack helicopters.
Uh-huh.
And when they finally got on the deck with these, and they had engaged, I guess, the enemy, this happened where a hand grenade had been thrown or otherwise was discovered there in the midst of them, and he jumped on it. And I remember getting, you know, the news about it, and I said, "Boy, that's, you know, what a dumbass." And my wife said, "You know what happened?" I said, "I got the telegram. I got," and she was shocked. And
did you read the telegram for your wife?
No. Well, what happened was that they will send an army chaplain out, but I got the telegram, and she said, "What happened?" And I said, "That dumbass did it." I didn't even...
That dumbass did it. That's what you said about your son?
Yes, I said it about my son, and you know why? Because he's my son.
And but your wife must have been hysterical.
My wife was... She knew what my opinion was, and I said to her, "Here you go. Take a look at your dumbass son." And I gave her the telegram that said, basically, that Jerome Bonafide with the 8th Army was... You know, however they put it, was blown in half by a hand grenade because he's a dumbass.
And that's not what the telegram. You've laid across your son's memory this idea of dumbass.
I love my son, and no, that's not all that he was about. He was a great young man, and he was a smart kid, and anything a father could be proud of. He was just one of these guys that like to stick his neck out for other people, and I'm here to tell you that there is nothing in this world that will... there is nothing in this world that is worth less than sticking your neck out for some other dumbass.
And what do you mean, sticking your neck out for another dumbass? Is your attitude, in other words...
Hold on for a minute, Mr. Jenny. You know, with all due respect, I'm the one that's had the Korean War experience, not you.
I understand that, sir. But when you say sticking your head out for some dumbass, I mean, you, in your world, everybody's a dumbass.
No, that's not true.
What about the? Let me ask you a question. Now let's get down. We have an impressive list of men and women who have won the Congressional Medal of Honor. Most of those people received that honor posthumously. You know, after they died.
Yes.
Are you telling me that's a whole list of dumbasses?
Pretty much, yeah. Absolutely.
Did you see the series on, what was it called, The Pacific?
Yeah, you're talking about that John Bassalome. I'm way ahead of you. I'm way ahead of you. Is there anybody dumber than a guy that leaves Hollywood? He's got a movie star for a girlfriend, and this stupid bastard, he goes back and he gets blown. He gets his ass blown into the. His ass went here and his head over there. What's dumber than that?
Are you talking about this man, Bassalome?
Yes, I'm talking about him. Is that the guy?
Yeah.
He had a movie star for a girlfriend.
The guy was a Marine, and he wanted to go back, and he wanted to train other Marines.
Oh, you know, I understand he wanted to train other Marines. I'm not telling you, you know, that they... But this, I'm just telling you, it proves to me he's a dumbass.
But he didn't get the Congressional Medal of Honor for that. He got it for something else. He got it for,
He got it on Guadalcanal. And he did it, he got, because the, what did the dumbass do? He turned around, I gotta go back and get ammunition, and there's five Japanese. And so this dumbass, all he wanted to do was get a cup of coffee, and he almost got himself machine gun in half.
All right, back with Lloyd Bonafide and more, and see Ron Turner next hour on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And with us is Lloyd Bonafide, a Navy veteran and a man who lost his son in Vietnam. And we're talking about heroes, the Japanese nuclear workers, the Fukushima 50, who have said that they expect that they'll die. As the result of their exposure to radiation, they're willing to die to help, quote, save the nation, Japan. And it is rather uplifting. But you have said over and over here, Mr. Bonafide, that people who do that, people who give, who sacrifice themselves, are dumbasses, are stupid. You've even put your own son in that category.
Mr. Henry is my son. And
I know he's your son, but I still have not figured out here why it is you would relegate an individual that goes out and saves another human being at the cost of their own life and call them a dumbass.
Let me explain. I can tell you something. In Korea, and we were in a very, very isolated area, and this is right after the Marines had been pulled out of Chosin Reservoir. And I had a box of rations. I had a case of rations. And I saw a man and two little children. And he was pushing a bicycle. As you can well imagine, the refugee situation at this time in Korea was quite, daunting. And we were doing what we could, but it was very difficult. The communist Chinese had pushed everybody, down the peninsula.
Right.
But I had this box of rations, and I gave the rations to this man. Now, you can take my situation, giving these rations to this man, or my son in Vietnam, who fell on a hand grenade, or these Japanese radiation workers. None of us are going to get any real appreciation. The Japanese are going to die. My son died. And not one person in the last 60 years has said to me what a great thing it was that you did. So, you know, whether it's me or my son or the Japanese, no one cares. Look at me. I'm alive. How I am alive, I don't know, but I'm alive. And no one says anything to me about the K-rations that I gave to this Korean. No one says to me, what a great man, and they didn't get, you know, the Congressional Medal of Honor, whatever you want to call it. Nobody, in any way, shape, or form, did that. And so you see what a, really, and I say this with respect, but I also say it with truth, you see what a rotten world it is that we live in, and an ungrateful world that we live in. When I had the K-rations...
I want to interrupt you, if you don't mind, sir.
No, I just want to finish. I had the K-rations. I gave them to this Japanese or what, the Korean, and that's the last I saw him.
Well, Mr. Bonafide, your son fell on a hand grenade. The Japanese nuclear workers are going to be exposed to radiation. You gave a box of K-rations to a Korean father. Now, can you tell me how your sacrifice... Are you saying that's equal to...
Equal to my... Yes, of course. Why would it not be equal? This is what I'm saying. Because those guys are so stupid they got killed. I'm supposed to take a back seat? This is the point I'm making.
Well, they got killed, but that man... Your son got killed laying on a hand grenade. The Chinese are going to, the Japanese are going to die as a result of radiation poisoning. You're not going to die.
Well, it was...
You're Korean.
I'm sorry, it was Korean. And I don't understand your point of view. I was at war. I could have been killed. I could, in that instant, I could have been killed.
What was he going to kill you for?
The fact that I gave him K-rations, he might have felt they were booby-trapped. The little boy and the little girl that were with him could very well have been hiding weapons, and they would have cut me in half. And are you telling me that what I did wasn't as good as my son laying on a hand grenade? My son's an idiot. I'm still here. I don't understand...
I find it to be just a little tough to hear you say that your son's an idiot for laying on a hand grenade. You're a great guy for handing out a box of K rations to the people, to the Koreans that you saw, and what you did was equal to what he did.
Are you trying to tell me that it's not?
Absolutely, I'm telling you that it's not. I'm telling you that it's not equal to what the Japanese nuclear workers are doing. How have you risked your life handing a box of rations to a Korean man with two little children?
Let me go over it again, okay? Because I guess, you know, you're excuse me for saying dumbass, Phil, but...
You know, I don't like that word being applied to just anybody.
Well, you're talking like you're a dumbass. Okay.
I don't like that word being applied just to anyone, okay?
Well, all right, but here... I just got done telling you that the Korean, and I gave him the K-rations, he could have thought that I had just handed him a bomb, and that he was, the only thing left would be his two, the six legs, his two, his son, and his daughter, and the two wheels of the bicycle, and that's all that's left. And or his son might have opened up on me, With an automatic weapon. Now, that is a reality.
And did you see soldiers dying that way?
In what way?
Did you see them getting killed by little kids with automatic weapons?
No, I didn't see it, but I could well imagine it might have happened. And the fact, and I did see one guy hand a Korean a box of explosives, which he thought was funny. I didn't. But he didn't know that it was plastic explosive. He thought it was just firecrackers. And all that was left were two sandals and handlebars. And
Who is this?
Of a Korean.
And two sandals and handlebars.
That's... Well...
Oh, so now we think it's funny, huh?
No, I don't, sir. I don't think it's funny at all. All I'm telling you is my dear son... Oh, was he an idiot?
All right, Lloyd, thank you for giving us some perspective.
I didn't give you anything. You everything I told you, you think I'm a lying old...
No, thank you for giving me perspective on the Japanese nuclear workers. I still think they're heroes, as I think your son is a hero, as I think you're a good man, too.
But I'm not a hero, right? I'm not a hero?
You're kind of unenthusiastic.
Well, whatever, man. I mean, you know, I'm one unenthusiastic. His son is a hero. The Japanese workers are heroes. He's a good man handing K rations to a Korean guy and then telling me, you never know, man. It could have, he might have thought it was explosives and he could have opened up on me. I'm not buying it. All right, our number 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, still to come tonight. Ron Tarner weighs in on a website used by teachers to poke fun at their students, plus a couple on a blind date discover their brother and sister. We'll get into the story of Jason Rance and his sister. I'm kidding. Kidding. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show in just a moment.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
We can't fight this fight alone, but I think we're going to have to.
Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, radio for Patriots, by Patriots. Yes, this is a great country. And in many ways, you could say it's a great world. That's stretching it. Maybe we should say that it's a world with great potential. But it is a great country. But even in a country like America, things that are inexplicable take place every day. But if things that are inexplicable take place every day in America, what do you suppose is going on out there in the big, wide, beautiful blue world beyond the borders of our country? One can only hold their breath and imagine. You see, I believe when we get these very, very strange, disgusting, and aberrant stories like the one I'm about to read you, it isn't because all of a sudden people are acting strange. It's because we have the phenomenon of communication today, this new, elevated and evolved kind of communication known as the Internet and the World Wide Web, that we're finding out about these things. Witness this story from Bel Air, Ohio. A morbidly obese man named Robert Hughes has died after police found him fused to a chair he had not moved from in 2 years and were forced to cut a hole in the wall of his house just to get him out. Now, we've heard about having holes cut.
Yeah, that happened a lot with fat people.
Yeah, we've heard about the holes being cut in houses.
But I wonder, the guy was stuck to a chair. And you know why? Because he went to the bathroom there.
All right, Bud, let me finish this. Bud's basically right. A 43-year-old man, his roommates called police, who found him unconscious. They called police. They didn't call a hospital. He was taken to Wheeling Hospital in nearby West Virginia, where he later died. Nearby West Virginia. So I'm going to have to say that this was on the border of West Virginia and Ohio, and I would further say that it was being on the border of West Virginia and Ohio. It might be in an area of the country where perhaps people are rural. And I'm not saying that this is a phenomenon of rural people, because this is a story that could easily have happened in a major city. And quite frankly, I think it could have happened because the apartments are bigger, you know.
Yeah, wouldn't it be a cabin or anything?
Right, you're not going to easily get stuck to a toilet. In any event, he was taken to Wheeling Hospital in nearby West Virginia, where he later died. A hospital spokesman would not comment on the man's death. The man lived with two able-bodied roommates, including his girlfriend. How he had a girlfriend, this is another, and I'm not saying that a guy can't be morbidly obese and, yes, even stuck to a toilet seat because of the fact that, oh, God.
No, that guy, he didn't even wipe.
I don't know. But how you get a girlfriend out of that bargain is as bizarre as I can... And the indignity of this, we're talking about a man has passed on, a man who was something to somebody, who people loved him, and he passed through this world.
Yeah, a lot of stuff passed through him.
And I...
You shut up.
Although that is pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
But this was a man who lived and a man who had friends and family, and look at this. What do we know about him? I'll tell you what we know about him. He was stuck to a chair because he was so fat and filthy. The roommates called police upon finding the man unresponsive on Sunday. Officers who responded to the scene said the man's skin was fused to the fabric of chair and that he was sitting in his own feces and urine with maggots visible.
Oh, yeah. That's bitching.
What's bitching about it?
It's just a weird story. I love it. Give me that. I want to collect it.
No, you ain't collecting nothing. God. God. Oh, man.
Man. What's wrong with people?
I don't know. I think people are lost. I think some people just get lost. They just, I don't think there's an abomination that has not transpired in the history of the human race. Look, think about it. Think about it, man. We've had humans having sex with animals. We've had humans eating human flesh. We've had human beings running around sex with children. We've had, is there any limit to the depravity? Now, that's just moral depravity. There's no limit to man's depravity. Now, when you bring into the equation, is there any limit to how debased a human being can become in his own personal physical habits? And the answer to that question is also a no. There's no limit.
Well, what's worse? I mean, how could it get much worse than that?
I don't know, bud, but just the fact you want to collect this story...
I think it's interesting to collect them.
I'd like to belt you just for that. His girlfriend admitted to medics she'd been feeding him by hand since he got too big to get up. At what point did you think to yourself, I gotta get out of here, this is a nut house. Not only does it stink, maybe they felt bad for him, you know?
I was gonna say that, man. Maybe they didn't want to split. If they did, the man's gonna die, you know?
Well, they don't have to live with the guy. And the other thing is, hey, you know what? Ambulances are wonderful things. You can even call them before a guy's croaked. What about that?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Hey, I got a great idea there, Jethro. What's that? How's about we call the ambulance before this guy turns blue? Well, I didn't think of that. Yeah, well, funny how these things just kind of pop into my mind. I don't know. Sources told the local television station. Sources told the local TV station in Bel Air. How'd you like to be the reporter that got sent out on that one? Good evening. We stand in front of a log cabin here in Bel Air that the man insisted on eating, drinking, and sleeping in the chair. Friends of the 43-year-old said he had complained about arthritis in his knees, and every time he tried to move, One friend said, I tried to suggest him going to the hospital and getting his legs checked out, but he wouldn't do it. He said he didn't like doctors. Well, no kidding. I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah, the guy, like, is afraid of doctors, man. He's going to sit there in his own doo-doo.
Sit there in his own doo-doo.
You're talking like a baby. I can say the word.
All right, okay. One friend said, okay, so you can't force somebody to do something they don't want to do. Ain't that the truth? But I will tell you this, you can call out the authorities if someone is obviously an imminent risk. You know what I mean?
Uh-uh.
I mean, if you believe that someone is at risk, serious risk of imminent, death, for instance, or serious injury... You can call an ambulance, you can call the police, you can call the authorities and say, look, this individual, I believe, is in very serious trouble, and they're not doing anything for themselves, and they're not moving, and I believe that they've got a very serious health situation here. Are you telling me the cops aren't going to do anything?
Yeah, that guy, he can do what he wants to do.
No, he can't, man. Not if he's sitting in his own crap. No, uh-uh. No, 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 no. No, man. They're going to, at least they're going to stick his ass in, if they can ever get his ass out of the chair.
Well, that's the point.
But once they do, they'll put him in 72-hour observation.
What for?
Are you kidding me or something, man? You wouldn't put a guy like that in a loony bin just to check him out?
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
You guys don't think about a lot of stuff, man. First thing I do is, after I got the guy cleaned up, is go, well, let's take him over to the psychiatrist. What the hell's your problem? You know?
Problem is he can't move on account of the size of his butt. You know, everything. Can't move.
Well, he may not be able to move, man, but that doesn't keep him from moving his brain and saying, somebody call an ambulance, please. You know, will someone call me an ambulance? Because I'm in big trouble. Anyway, one officer said it was the worst thing that he had ever responded to. Another told the local TV station he had to throw away his uniform after helping remove the man from the chair. The living room where the man lived in, his chair was filthy. It was deplorable. It's unbelievable that somebody lives in conditions like that, said Jim Chase, who's a local city code enforcer, and he was talking to WTRF television. I instructed the landlord on Monday morning and the two people, the tenants of the house, that they had to get it clean. There's no way they can live in something like that, and so they're working on it, he added. I'll be going back daily, checking on it, making sure that they get it cleaned and serviceable. If not, they must get out. Did a cop do that?
Yeah, I bet a cop can do that. Cop can do that. A cop can take a kid out of a place, like they take a little tiny kid out.
Well, I know the cop can take a kid out of a house, that and you have to enforce the health code. But, I mean, can the cops say, oh, I mean, doesn't he have to get a health inspector or something like that?
I don't know. A lot of them health inspectors are pretty fascist.
What do you mean a lot of those health inspectors are pretty... Boy, oh boy, man. I'd like to see where you live, man.
No kidding.
No, but it's just like Nazis.
Like Nazis. Why? Because they make you take your garbage out? The landlord said the man used to be an active person and said that she had no idea how bad his condition was since he covered himself with a blanket every time she came to visit. An active guy. What, like 3 years ago, the guy's out there playing volleyball in just some trunks, you know?
Yeah, he's probably all ripped.
What are you kidding me?
Yeah, I bet you like 2 years ago, the guy's ripped. He's just got on a little, you know, bathing suit like a thong.
A thong. 2 years ago, the cat's out there hitting volleyballs, wearing a thong. You know, swigging a beer, wearing Wayfarers, he's just all that. 2 years later, the guy is melded to a seat. I would say something happened in his life, wouldn't you?
I'd say he got some bad news along the way somewhere, yeah.
All right, folks, I didn't mean to make light, but you have to at some point. Don't you have to say this is beyond any of our experience, so we have to sort of crack wise about it. You'll notice that I have not mentioned the man's name. I'm not going to mention his name either. I think there's enough indignity in the way this guy went out. And although maybe I mentioned it once, because it's actually in the story once, so maybe I did. When we come back, it'll be Dr. Ron Tarner. Dr. Tarner to talk about how teachers are unstressing at the expense of their students. We're going to find out about this in the world-famous Phil Hendry Show coming up next.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
About 3 or 4 years now, we've been doing this every time.
My first reaction is it's pretty awesome that people are just having sex.
It's something that's behind closed doors.
There have been people who call us pedophiles, they've called us perverts.
Honey. You blew it!
Wait a minute. That woman, she happens to be breastfeeding right here in the middle of McDonald's.
Honey.
Anyway, welcome to the Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And, of course, news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And it's been a little, it's just, I can't tell you, but behind the scene. You know, if you get a backstage pass and you are watching our live streaming video of this show, what's that? You're in your car? You're traveling? I can't do that, Phil. I can't find my, you know, get my laptop. No. You don't have to do that. You can watch live streaming video of this show on your cell phone, on your iPhone, on your Droid, all right? Yes, I did say iPhone because Skyfire is here. It's a beautiful thing. And now, even with the iPhone, not only on demand, but live streaming video of the show. And the reason why I'm bringing all of this up is that you will see the behind the scenes. We've had just a week full of crazy stuff, but I feel confident that we'll get it all worked out. Welcome back to the show, our final hour here of this Thursday night on the Phil Hendry Show. Now, what we were talking about, and I also want to mention that Ron Tarner has been rescheduled for tomorrow night. We called Dr. Tarner. We said we don't think that your story and your point of view and the things that you want to say will be best served now as opposed to perhaps earlier in our show tomorrow night. So we're going to do that.
And so join us for Ron Turner tomorrow night and other fun things. And, of course, our website, philhendryshow.com. And what else have I forgotten to do? I don't even think I did the affiliate spotlight tonight, but that's okay. Oh, yeah. Portland, KXFD, 970. And in Kihei. That's Kihei, Hawaii, K-A-O-I, 1110 AM. And our website, philhendryshow.com. Now, we were talking about a man in Bel Air, Ohio. And I'm going to pull this up on the map that I have been given here by... young Mr. Rance. Bel Air, Ohio, as you might... and is that a river that is running there, Bud?
Yeah, it looks like it might be a storm channel or something, and I'm not even sure about it.
Well, it's Bel Air, Ohio, is right along a rivulet, or a river of some kind, in the mountain country on the very edge of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. So it's... it's not what I would call, although it's not that far from Pittsburgh.
Well, I mean, you don't know in Pittsburgh. It depends on whether or not they got a freeway, man. It doesn't look like they got no freeway anywhere near there.
Well, they got to have, what do you mean a freeway? They got to have an interstate someplace.
Yeah, but they might have to drive for a day, or maybe not a day, but if you got to drive like a half a day to get an interstate, I wouldn't call that convenient, would you?
If you got to drive half a day to get to an interstate, where do you live, man? In the outback of Australia? Where do you have to drive half a day to get to an interstate in America?
Well, like in Ohio.
Yeah, what about down here?
I don't see that. Hold on for a minute. Look at this. Bel Air, Ohio is near the 470, man. There's the 470. Well, you go right up the 7 to the 470, and from there, you're into Pittsburgh. So,
yeah, you were saying these people are so hick that the man got stuck to the chair because he couldn't wipe, and they got to drive like half a day to get toilet paper.
I never said anything of the sort, Bud.
What were you saying?
You heard what I said. I said that they might be in a very rural area, and being in a rural area, there may be certain, I don't know, insular and provincial customs and manners that makes you know, busting out into the world and telling someone I'm stuck to a toilet one of the most traumatic things that will ever happen. Although I have to be honest with you, telling someone that I'm stuck to a toilet living in a large city would be very traumatic, okay?
You ever had to?
Yeah, just the other... What do you mean if I have
had to? Well, I don't know.
No, I haven't had to. But I can tell you this. Whether you live in a big city or a small city, telling somebody, hi, I'm stuck to a toilet in my own filth. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's that. No, I can't. No, 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 no. But that's what happened to this gentleman. So when I was theorizing that, and as I look here, it is a fairly rural section. Bel Air is not a particularly built up city. It's not the holler. It's not way down in the middle of an area that no outsider gets into. See what I'm saying?
You mean like Deliverance?
Well, I don't know if it's like Deliverance, man. You know, that is such a cliche, Deliverance. People keep bringing that up. But the fact of the matter is that in our country, in America, there are places that rarely are visited by anybody other than the people that live there. As modern a society as we are, we have places where the folks that live there, man, that's whose business it is and anybody else's business, and they live there, and a lot of times they haven't been out of that area, you know.
Do you think we've got, like, Stone Age people?
No, we ain't got no Stone Age people. We've got people who... I saw a special on TV, and just give an example, on hillbillies, and I'm using the term they used on the television program, so forgive me, but hillbillies in Kentucky... And we were making jokes. I said, you know, Mitch McConnell is the senator from Kentucky. I don't know how any senator from Kentucky could stand up and start talking about anything other than getting plumbing into his state if you had people like this living there, you know. But these were folks that lived up in the hills in Kentucky, and they were, and I'm telling you the truth right now, they were bathing in rainwater, in a rain barrel.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
What do you mean you've seen that before?
Well, I mean, I've seen people have rain barrel bathing.
Yeah, that's what they were doing. This was the water supply, rainwater in a barrel. And they washed their clothes in it. And they had a system of conduits and sort of, what do you call those things, man? God dang it. Not rivulet, but it's they're little, well, you know, little gutters, I should say, that direct the rainwater into these barrels and these other receptacles that they use. And then, okay, then what they did was they had, I think they had electricity, but it was, I don't know, it was run up the hill on a cord from somewhere. Then they would go out and they foraged for herbs and vegetables.
What do you mean, like weeds and stuff?
Not weeds. I mean, these were foods that they recognized. And I remember I was watching this and thinking, well, this is very similar to, like, natives in New Guinea who know exactly the mushrooms and the different kinds of plants to pick there for food. Because, you know, you pull the wrong mushroom and you die. And the people of New Guinea, they know exactly which mushrooms are delicious in a salad and which will get you high. You know,
really?
Well, I imagine, and then which ones, you know, will kill you. But the people in Kentucky the same way. They're out there and they're pulling this weed here, and oh, there's that weed there, and they make their food from that, and then they have their gun, and they go out and they kill an animal. And now, look, I don't consider myself smarter than them, but those folks, for whatever reason, their lives and probably for many generations have revolved around surviving on that level, and that's about as good as it gets, man. You know.
Yeah, but what are you doing for kicks?
Well, they watch TV, but like I say, they've got this electricity they got to run up on a power cord from that feeds like three or four other shacks. It's goofy. But their world revolves around, you know, he's got a girlfriend and she likes him. This is sort of like, you know.
Yeah, his sister.
They didn't say it was his sister.
Well, they're hillbillies.
Well, that don't mean he's having sex with his sister. They're talking about other clans, and they're talking about, and then the closest town was the county seat, and that was like one way, 50 minutes, something like that. So one morning, the guy says, well, got to go into Festley or whatever this town is. This is the county seat. So they're in the county because my brother's in jail. So his brother got thrown in jail somehow in the county seat, so he's got to drive 50 minutes to get to this county seat to get his brother out of the can. And that's it. I mean.
Well, I mean, don't they, like, go to the mall or anything?
What mall, man? What mall are they going to go to?
You're crazy. You're a dumbass. Shut up, man.
Hey, watch it. Don't call him a dumbass.
What do you mean a mall? I mean if they go to a store or something.
There ain't no stores, man. There's nothing. What do you mean store? They're shooting their food and they're pulling weed. This is in Kentucky. Now, I am not putting this down. What I'm saying is this is America. This is America, and we forget. Now, if we have that in America, and I believe that the poorest person in America, and we've got poor people, I'm not trying to minimize that, but the poorest person in America is wealthier than half the world. I mean, that is how messed up, that ain't how good we are. I'm not saying that. That's how jacked up the world is. That's how jacked up the world is. And so that was very interesting. But the whole thing about the holler and that whole deliverance thing, I don't know about that, man. But, you know, we're going to take a break, but I will tell you this one story. A friend of mine was golfing, and they went down to a golf tournament, and it was in a place in Alabama. Now, I'm not putting Alabama down, but this happened to be a golf course out in the sort of the outskirts of Montgomery, Alabama. And anyway, he hit the ball off the tee, and he shanked it really bad off the fairway way back into these woods. So he goes to look for the ball, and he comes upon a home, and he sees that staring at him through the window are these two little bald-headed kids, right?
Man, just give me the creeps.
Well, hold on. And he's like, wow. And it starts to rain. So he says, can I stand? He's pointing to the awning. Can I go under there? And these two little bald-headed kids are just like,
aah. Man, that's creepy.
You know? So the little bald-headed kids don't say anything. So he goes and he stands under this awning. Well, appearing at the screen door is a larger version of the two little bald-headed kids. Now it's just this big bald-headed guy, right?
Yeah.
So he again says, now to this guy, he says, hi, you know, sorry to bother you, but it's raining. Do you mind if I, can I stand here or should I just go ahead and make my way back to the clubhouse? The guy goes, you make your way back to the clubhouse. Yeah, you bet I will, you know, and.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, yeah. But he said it creeped him out because all he saw were these figures through the screen door, and they were bald and white and no real facial features, you know?
Maybe it was aliens.
No, there's not. I'm talking about it like it's weird, but no, they were aliens.
Did they have eyebrows?
Yeah, they had eyebrows. All right, we'll be back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The so-called Albany 7 lotto workers are trying to decide if they'll share the cash with their unlucky co-workers. Remember, we had Bob Green on last night about this, saying that he'd sue anybody that won millions in his store. What would you do? Plus, tennis star David Ferrer hits a ball at a crying baby during a tournament. All right. No, I'm kidding. Let's talk about that. We come back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back, and don't forget, tomorrow night it's Dr. Ron Tarner with us as he talks about the pressures that many teachers are facing and how they're letting off a little steam on Facebook. Won't be the first time we've talked about that. That's tomorrow night here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. If you join us online at philhendryshow.com, you can watch live streaming video of our show right now. Phil TV in HD, as I take people around the horn, as we like to say, our three-camera angles, as well as our virtual sets, our special effects, and, of course, we do have bring in the net, that is the any one of the live streaming channels like HBO or not HBO but CNN, et cetera, so forth and so on. So that's kind of what we do. And get over there, you can get a backstage pass and take a look at everything we have as well as our audio archives. New York State workers share $319 million lottery. They haven't decided if they'll share winnings with the unlucky co-workers. Now, it's an interesting story because yesterday when we were talking to Bob Green about this, he was going to sue his employees for not cutting him in. And during a break, I remember, did I say to you, Bud, or somebody?
Now, you're talking to Rance, and you said that they would.
God, man.
Yeah, man, why don't you drink some Pepto-Bismol or something?
What?
Well, what do you mean?
I got stuck.
Yeah, I'll say you got stuck. Anyway,
let me get some of that Bismol.
Yeah, go get some Bismol, man. So I opined that
that's a Bill O'Reilly word.
What do you mean that's a Bill O'Reilly word?
That word, he goes opine.
Well, guess what? I'm using a word, too.
No.
God. He was saying that he was hoping that they would cut him in. And then during the break, I said to Rance, I said, you know, I bet you anything those folks in New York will be decent enough to cut in this guy. And at the time, there was only one guy who ordinarily was buying the ticket with them. But for whatever reason, said, I don't feel lucky. I don't feel like that I, you know, he said, I don't feel like I want to do this today. And guess what? He wound up, not winning with them. So there are seven of them who won $319 million in the Mega Millions lottery, and that was on Thursday, and they're still deciding whether to split it with five unlucky co-workers who chose not to play this time around. Five? I thought there was only one.
Yeah, they said it was only one.
Three women and four men who work as IT specialists and program managers at the New York Division of Housing and Community Renewal and live in the Albany suburbs came forward to claim the fifth largest mega prize in history. They are the so-called Albany Seven, elected to take a lump sum payout, which amounts to $19 million after taxes each. Boy, that's a sweet payout, man.
Boy, no kidding.
After taxes, man, $19 million. That's a beautiful thing, baby. They are among a group of 12 colleagues who, for the past 4 years, have pooled their money in the hopes of winning the biggest jackpot game in the United States. Five of them, however, bowed out of the March 25th purchase, which turned out to be the lucky ticket. Some of us got in and some of us didn't, said Gabriel Mahar, 29, of Colony, who heeded a longtime lottery motto, you gotta play to win. Her dream purchase, she said, was a dishwasher. What the hell is that supposed to mean?
That's what she's gonna buy.
With 19 million bucks? I don't think it's sunk in. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about buying a dishwasher, you want $19 million, ain't sunk in.
Tell me about it.
Oh, I'm going to get a dishwasher. You got $19 million. Why don't you? I got a great idea. Start a dishwasher company. Buy a dishwasher company. All right. The winners said they have not yet decided whether to share their winnings with the five who missed out. Now, I don't know what that would essentially bring their winnings down to, but you're talking instead of seven, there's five more. That's 12. So you split the 319. Actually, it's 200 million divided by 12. Rance, do the math on that if you wouldn't mind, because I don't want to, you know, stop down and do it. Although I probably should be able to. Is it about, I don't know what it is.
It's about 15.
Never mind, okay? One coworker regularly played in the office pool opted out on the night they had the winning ticket, according to an Albany, New York deli owner who knows the winners. They asked him a couple of times, and he said he didn't feel lucky, said Jill Cook, owner of Cook's Deli, where the group often comes for lunch and where she's probably going to touch them up a whole lot. No, I'm kidding. $16.5 million. No kidding, huh? $16.5 million divided by... Wait a minute, man. Divided... $200 million divided by 12... as opposed to 7, is $16.5 million. I got money that says he's going to redo the math and it's going to be different.
Why?
Because he usually does. All right, anyway, while none of the winners went to work this week, the seven co-workers still have not decided whether to retire. One winner said staff training underway for years as part of a state emergency preparedness exercise left him assured that the people who are there are very capable of picking up if we choose not to return. Man, that's something, huh? Offering a blow-by-blow account of the purchase of the lucky ticket, the workers took turns speaking at a press conference at a New York State lottery at the New York State Lottery headquarters. Mike Barth, who lives in Bethlehem, said he was all set to buy the ticket at a convenience store when he shifted out of the checkout line to reach for a Snickers dark candy bar. The man behind him then stepped in front of him. Listen to this bullcrap. I didn't say anything because I wanted to be nice, Barth said, and I later was thinking maybe that guy would have won. While not exactly a Wonka bar containing the golden ticket, the faded candy bar will always hold a sweet spot for Barth. All right. So if they cut the people in, if they divide 200 million, which is what you get after, divided by 12, according to Rance, that's 16.5 million. So they're only losing 2.5 million per. I mean, I say only, you know.
Yeah, easy come, easy go, not your money.
Well, still, man, I mean, you know, I'm not saying easy come, easy go. I'm just saying, you know, it's not like they're getting hit up. They're not getting touched up for $5 million or something. It's $2.5 million. It hurts, but, you know, they can cut in five more people, and they still walk home with $16.5 million. At least that's Rance arithmetic. We'll see during this break when I do the math myself. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Coming up, a couple on a blind date discover their brother and sister. Isn't that a happy, that's great. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show. What a happy moment that must be for them.
Phil Henry. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, radio for Patriots, by Patriots, every night, Monday through Friday. And, of course, on Saturday nights, we have a local show here in the Los Angeles area called the Phil Hendry Show. It's on KFI. During the week, we are on K-Talk 1150 and great stations across the country, KNEW in San Francisco, WWRL in New York, WTKK in Boston, our good friends in Detroit, WDTW. Our good friends in Atlanta, WCFO in Miami, WAXY. Who am I forgetting, man? I'm not forgetting. KRCN in Denver. We're in Dallas. KPRC in Houston. I mean, some fantastic stations, great people. We thank you for being with us here as the Phil Hendry Show continues to lockstep into the future here. Radio for Patriots by Patriots.
You know, if you're an American and you value America and you have American values, you're going to find interest. You're going to find something important, something of substance in every story that may be on your computer, on your iPhone, on your Droid, or wherever you're pulling your news, if you'll pardon the expression, each day. In Edinburgh, Scotland, after months of flirtatious online correspondence, Sarah Kemp and George Bentley decided to finally meet up. Turns out the two had an awful lot in common, their brother and sister. Yeah, now, yeah.
She's going to hell, this bitch.
Now, Sarah and George were born in Ashford, Kent.
What are you trying to talk about American values?
I am talking about American values, and this ain't them. This is Scotland.
Ain't you from there?
I ain't from there. No, my ancestors are. Now, you know, Sarah and George were born in Ashford, Kent, where they spent an idyllic childhood with parents Felicity and David Bentley. But they lost touch in 1975. Uh-huh.
Well, you ditched your light or something?
Anyway, I don't mean to be childish. Sarah, who was six, joined her mom in Edinburgh, while David, nine, went with his father to East London. Neither parent remarried, but the two families never spoke again. God, that's sad.
Yes, it's sad.
As adults, Sarah and George tried to make contact, but had so little information that they were unable to trace each other's whereabouts. The search was made more difficult when Sarah married in 1989. She divorced a decade later, but kept her husband's surname of Kemp. George, age 47, a builder, said, "I had absolutely no idea where she was. I was also searching for Sarah Bentley's rather than Sarah Kemp's, as I obviously didn't know she was married. After a while, I think both Sarah and I gave up looking. Not being too bright, I should have realized that she might have had a different last name because she had been married, but that's what you get when you're the son of two people who were also brother and sister." And no, I'm just lying about that. But against the odds, the siblings were reunited after joining casual dating site ForgetDinner.com UK. Yeah.
What's that mean?
It means forget dinner is what it means. What does that mean, forget dinner?
That's what he just asked.
They began courting online and frequently exchanged emails and even photographs. After 3 months, they decided to, quote, bite the bullet and met for lunch at the White Horse, George's local pub in East Ham. Sarah said, "I would never have agreed to go to London on a blind date, but we hit it off from the beginning, and our relationship blossomed as we emailed each other more and more often. And then we found out we had the same parents, and I thought, what are the odds of that? And so I said, what the hell? I love London." No, she didn't say that, but they would find out. Oh, yeah, they'd find out real, real fast, man. She added, "We had so much in common. We finally really enjoyed each other's company. It was as if we'd known each other all of our lives." Imagine that. After talking about their childhoods for more than an hour, the pair finally twigged, and that must be some British term, that they were related, at which time George started to sing.
"When you're really ready to play Prem Nevada."
Well, he thought he hit the... Anyway, George said, "This was the meeting of a lifetime, and we're now planning to see each other as often as possible to catch up on the time spent apart, and yes, if it's so, you know, if we choose, have sex."
Hey! They didn't say that!
No, they didn't. Despite their embarrassment, they celebrated the union with a bottle of champagne and spent the rest of the evening getting slowly sozzled. Is that nuts or what? It's your sister, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, what if you're having a good time?
They were having a good time.
You know, though.
What are you talking about?
I mean, if you didn't know it was going to be your sister. It turned out you're a sister, but also you may be interested in her.
It's my sister, but I may be interested in her?
You're all inbred and everything, man.
Shut up.
Hey, you ought to expect that. What are you talking about anyway?
All I'm saying is, you know you're my sister, but I believe I could be interested in you. Are you free now? I don't know.
Are you? You're sick, dude. You're sick. You know, if you find out it's your sister, isn't that something that is automatically going to put the brakes on whatever it is you think you're feeling, okay? You know, I mean, that's just goofy. Anyway... Since the date took place, the siblings have met twice more in Edinburgh. George said this was the meeting of a lifetime. A spokesman for bookies, William Hill, said the chances of the pair meeting in such a way were 500 million to one. That's what I call...
When you're really ready to play.
So anyway, 500, he added they are unlucky in love, but clearly not unlucky in life. So that's a beautiful thing there, man.
What's beautiful about it? The guy's all, what if he didn't discover his sister until the next day?
Well, then I guess he would have had a problem.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, they found out that they were related when they, it says there, they slowly twigged that they were related. I don't think that there was anything unusual other than the following thing. They met on this whatever it's called, a dating service, and they meet, and they're obviously a couple of upstanding people, so they sat down in an open restaurant, and they're having a nice time, and they're talking, and they come to realize that they are actually, you know, they've been looking for each other anyway, you know?
Yeah, but what if the guy's all in the mood for, you know, being all, you know, and, you know, I don't know.
If he was in the mood for sex, is that what you're trying to spit out, bud?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, man, that probably really put him off that, man, when he find out, hi, and you're who? I'm your sister. That's swell.
Yeah, that probably put him off at all right.
Yeah. So all's well that ends well there, because like the guy said there, the bookie, he said they were unlucky in love, and Sonny Erickson at the Sonny Erickson Open quarterfinals, and David Ferrer wasn't too happy either. Trailing in his match and annoyed by the crying, Ferrer directed a forehand lob toward the infant. Well, we'll find out just how serious that was. In point of fact, he was having a very, very tough afternoon. Let's listen here as the play-by-play announcers react to David Ferrer hitting a ball at a crying baby.
A baby crying out. Ferrer's going to serve through it. Yeah, he's struggling right now. And he whacks that ball way up in the seats. I'll get some whistles and perhaps a warning.
He was hitting it towards the baby. You can't do that. That's why you get the booze.
She's going to hell, this bitch.
All right, so, anyway, trailing in his match and annoyed by the crying, Ferrer directed a forehand lob toward the infant after losing his serve midway through the second set on Wednesday. The ball didn't come close to the youngster when it landed in the stands, but the crying did stop.
All right.
That ain't the whole... That's... The ball didn't come close to the youngster, but the crying stopped. It was in one moment of the match, but nothing special, Ferrer said. It was not the problem, meaning the baby crying was not the problem. Instead, the Spaniard blamed a case of indigestion. He lost to American Marty Fish 7-5-6-2. Fish said he didn't see Ferrer hit the ball into the stands. He said he'd probably take that one back if he could. He's a very nice guy. He was obviously very flustered. World-famous Phil Henry Show will be back here. Online presence, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. A teacher with Asperger's snaps at a fat student and asks him if he ate his homework. Find out about that on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Teacher with Asperger's faces possible firing. You know, we are in the middle of, as I've said, for almost 4 years now, we're in the middle of a media revolution. We're in the middle of the shaking down of an entire industry. You're being told certain things are news and they're not. You're being told certain things are newsworthy and they're not. You're being fed editorial opinion as news story. And I really don't know whether, and I say this with the greatest respect, as much as we've talked about it, I really don't know whether you guys get it yet. Yeah, I know there's all kinds of geniuses in the world. I know there's people, yeah, I understand, Phil. Believe me, yeah, I get you. But the fact is, when I look at the world around me each and every day, I see people swallowing the same horse dung. The same people who will tell you, oh, I don't trust the media. I don't believe the media. I think the media is slanted. I think the media this. I think the media that. And they wind up swallowing the same stuff. Look at this story here. Well, it's a non-story. There is no story. Example. That Ferrer story, lob the ball toward an infant, not a story. Not a story at all. the GoDaddy CEO, Bob Parsons, who shot an elephant that fed a village of people in an area of Africa where they have problems with rogue elephants, and he was doing this so they could feed these people. There was absolutely nothing wrong with this. Well, this story has been artificially kept alive by the news media, by the Daily News. Not even it's not even a story having anything to do with people who are against hunting. It's just it's a manipulation of the process, and I'm personally getting sick and tired of looking at it. I'll give an example. We've had stories. Libya is important. Is it important to the American people? The answer to that question is no, it isn't. It's interesting. But nobody in America's got any opinion on it because they don't have the time to be thinking about Libya right now. They got other things on their minds. So, no, it's not a story. Syria? Syria's a story. Syria's an important story. Is it interesting to the American people? No, it's not interesting to the American people. They got other things on their minds right now. Is it an important story? Sure it is. Should you be studying that story? No, you should not. You have other things that are more important right now. If you have the time, go ahead and take a look at the Syria story. I will, because that's my job. I ain't going to bore you with it, though. I can tell you what it's about. I don't know whether you'd understand or not. I'm not saying I'm smarter than you. I'm saying I got more time to think of these things and read about these things and figure these things out, okay? And when I get done reading about 80% of the garbage that's fed me each and every day as news, I realize 80% of it isn't news at all. It's not a story at all. It wouldn't have been a story were it not for the fact that we have this big wide world web that has to have, it's like a big mouth. It has to have something to eat. It's chewing up every little tidbit of information. Stupid stuff. Asinine stuff that's local in nature and would never make the World Wide Web were it not for the fact the World Wide Web needs stuff to, you know, to talk about. I read a story, that David Ferrer story, the biggest zero story in the day. 2 days I've been looking at that story. This is an important thing to understand because every day this happens to you. Every day you're fed these stories that you're told are news stories and they're not. Now, I have a bunch of news stories here that were given to me by my producer, and they all qualify for that category. There's nothing here. You guys have been told that you got to care about stuff that is not just not important at all, okay? You guys are told that you have to care about something because there's some talk show host someplace that wants to talk about it, and so you got to get riled up about it, and suddenly that dumbass thinks he's got people talking about something nobody gave a damn about. These were stories once upon a time that wouldn't even have been stories. A Connecticut math teacher is fighting to keep his job after asking an overweight student if he ate his homework and telling another student that he hates him. Brookfield High School teacher Robert Wolkine was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome in 2002, a high-functioning form of autism in which social interactions can be awkward, making it difficult to recognize and comprehend other people's emotions. Do you realize that this is autism? And 10 years ago, this isn't a story, but today, because we got 85 million talk shows and 16,000 places to stick these stories, this is now national news. Watch what I do with it. Breast milk baby doll has parents peeved. Are they telling you the truth? Probably not. Are parents peeved? Maybe there's one or two that are peeved. Maybe there's three or four. I don't know. A new doll that mimics the act of breastfeeding has some parents up in arms and the manufacturer defending itself against accusations of perversion. Called Breast Milk Baby, the doll sold through Berusian Toys for $89 allows children to imitate the act of breastfeeding by using a special halter top that comes with the toy. The top is made from a colorful material with two flowers positioned where nipples would be. When the doll's mouth is brought close to a sensor embedded in the flower, the baby makes motions and sounds. Jesus. Anyway, critics say the doll is over-sexualizing young girls. Well, no, because breastfeeding a baby is not sex. Are you stupid or something? What it is doing is it's giving girls an adult behavior or adult, an adult behavior when they're little girls. They don't need to be learning these adult behaviors as little girls. There's going to be plenty of time to learn how to breastfeed a kid. I mean, what exactly is it that we need our little girls to learn these days? What do we want them to, what do we want to expose them to? Breastfeeding? I don't know if that's number one on the list. But the company and supporters said the toys are meant to teach young girls about the nurturing skills they'll need later in life. They're going to need a lot of skills later in life. They're going to need a lot of skills later in life. Maybe they want to be a chemist. Maybe they want to do a lot of things. But you clowns that make these baby dolls, you figure might as well get them rolling on this. Because, you know, I make dolls for a living. And I don't know what anybody else is doing. I got to sell some dolls. And, man, I've about run out of Barbie. The breast milk baby doll controversy. Dennis Lewis, the U.S. spokesman for Bergen Toys, talks to ABC News in an interview conducted over Skype, whatever, complaining the company has faced considerable criticism.
There have been people who called us pedophiles. They've called us perverts. They've said we're endangering the innocence of little girls. A little girl who plays with a breast milk baby now is just going to think breastfeeding is the normal way to feed a baby.
She'd know that breastfeeding is the normal way to feed a baby as an adult, man. Does she need to find that out now? What's your hurry there, Dennis? My Fox New York City spoke with passerbys about that. These are always not interesting.
I think it's a little inappropriate at a very young age.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they have a lot of time to figure that stuff out. Yep. I mean, they don't need to worry about it when they're kids.
Okay, he
laughed. They don't need to know about that at that age. Now.
All right, so that was, like, meaningless. And they were all laughing, too. Critics say the doll is over-sexualizing the young girls. Now, just because they're breastfeeding a baby, that is not sex. That's breastfeeding a baby. It's adult behavior, though, and I agree that a little kid doesn't need to learn that right away. There's other things to do, like be a kid. Further fueling the controversy, the website for Bergwan Toys, or Bergwan Toys, features an image of Mary breastfeeding the baby Jesus. Boy, you guys are really, these cats are really pushing it, man. The image is accompanied by the title, God Supports the Breast Milk Baby. Well, now that is a guy who is trying to piss people off.
Why?
You don't need to put that in the commercial. You don't need to put that in the ad copy. So that's the story. Now, a child psychiatrist by the name of Ned Halliwell says parents have absolutely nothing to worry about. I don't think it's sexualizing anymore. The little boy standing next to his father shaving and putting on shaving cream. The only way harm can be done with this doll is if you beat this kid over the head with the doll. Well, what do you call beating him over the head with the doll? These are little girls. And this jackass says, well, they're going to need these nurturing skills. Well, there's no question they're going to need nurturing skills. There's a lot of ways that they can get them. And at what age do they need to start getting them, man? At what age do they need to start getting them? All right. Do want to thank, as usual, Lloyd Bonafide for joining us tonight as we talked about what a dumbass his son was, jumping on a hand grenade. And we thank you for joining us tomorrow. It's going to be Ron Tarner, Dr. Ron Tarner, who is a school teacher and is going to be talking with us about using Facebook to take out their aggression on students that are pissing them off. We are the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and every night we are here with you until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And, of course, we're online at philhendryshow.com. If you get a backstage pass, you can look at live streaming video of our show. That's a pretty whole other story. Our show is produced by Jason Rance. Our technical director is Rick Johnson. Our associate producer is Dan Northcraft. You can pick up our Phil Hendry Show coffee mug, the Phil Hendry Show shot glass, all of our podcasts, all of our archives, and Phil TV at philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.